Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the November 10th, 2016 Loudoun County Planning Commission briefing. Our first item will be disclosures. Commissioner Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I met with Sarah Howard O'Brien on the Loudoun County Public School Valley Service Center. And on Tuesday the 8th, I went to the pre-application meeting. I do not know the applicant's name, but John Marathew was there on one for the extra space storage. And the second one was a Noble CrossFit with Jacqueline Marsh. That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Mr. Kears.
November 4th, I met with Maggie Parker and Dave Bryant of Loudoun Station regarding an application that will be coming up before us, I think, sometime soon. And November 7th, I met with Johnson Develop Associates regarding a, get ready for it, a self-storage facility in Loudoun County.
No way.
That's it.
Thank you, Commissioner Kears. Commissioner Jennings.
Today I've had conversations with Tom Jones and regarding the rural community residential density. ZOAM 2016-0004, also with Dory O'Brien on the same topic. I had a conversation with Mark Bacher today regarding Broadlands sections 104 and 108 and participation in a meeting with the board, two of the Board of Supervisors, and a brief conversation with Chris Gleckner regarding the ZMAP special exception and ZMOD on Poets Walk.
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings. Commissioner Blackburn.
No disclosures.
Thank you, Commissioner Blackburn. Commissioner Campbell, and welcome.
It's close. It was close enough.
It's all those C's in there.
Yeah. On October 9th, I met with LCPS staff, Sarah Howard O'Brien, about the transportation satellite facility. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Commissioner Scheel.
On the 27th of October, I met with the Waterford Citizens Association regarding their thoughts on the comprehensive plan. On October 31st, I met with Sarah O'Brien in regard to the Western County Transportation Facility. On November 1st, I met with Roland Englund regarding a enlargement of the church hall at St. Paul's, Nearsville. On November 6th, I met with a number of people in regard to the conservation of slave graveyards in the county. On November 8th, I met with Bill Thomas in regard to the transportation facility. Also with Elaine Walker in regard to the proposed floodplain overlay district. And on the 9th, I also met with Elaine Walker again on the proposed floodplain overlay district. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Commissioner Barnes?
None.
Thank you, Commissioner Barnes. On Tuesday, November 1st, I met with Sarah Howard O'Brien from the Loudoun County Public Schools regarding the transportation facility in Western Loudoun. And that concludes disclosures. I will now accept a motion to approve the October 13th, 2016 action summary as presented.
So moved.
Motion is moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Campbell. I have one minor modification on page one under disclosures, item 1-3. Mr. Bose's name is spelled B-O-H-S. It's hard to say that. And that's the only change I have, so I'd like to ask for a friendly amendment to approve these as amended. Is that sufficient? Okay. Any other changes or comments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 8-0-1 with Commissioner Sisley absent. I'll now accept a motion to approve the October 25th, 2016 action summary as presented. Moved by Commissioner Barnes. Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Blackburn. Are there any comments, questions, or additions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 8-0-1 with Commissioner Sisley absent. Okay. Our next item on the agenda is ZCPA 2016-6, special exception 2016-12, SIDP 2016-5, Sunoco Inc., Noakes Boulevard. Mr. Marchant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to go through six of the eight items that you'll be reviewing for the public hearing. First, as you mentioned, this is Sunoco Incorporated, three applications. This is a two-acre parcel north of Noakes Boulevard and east of City Center Boulevard, the south of Dulles Town Center. 2.5-acre parcel. The first request is to amend the concept development plan that applies to the property to allow an alternative site access from Noakes Boulevard in this general location. A special exception to allow an automobile service station, in this case Sunoco, on the site, and a signed development plan associated with the request for the automobile service station use, and also a by right restaurant that would be allowed on the property. The staff is generally supportive based on the applicable land use policies of the CCPA and special exception use. However, we have flagged for the commission's discussion the extent of the increases in total sign area, the maximum size of any one sign, and the maximum number of signs associated with the sign development package, which is here. I'm sorry, this SPIMI should be SIDP on this slide. So that's a general overview. The staff or the project manager, Steve Barney, is here to answer any immediate questions. Otherwise, we can follow with the public hearing with any follow-on questions that you might have.
Okay, and this is recommended to work session.
Yes, sir.
Okay, are there any questions for the staff on this application? Commissioner Kears.
So it looks like you've got an existing building right behind it, right? And then you have the parcel of this application. What is the building behind it? Do we know?
The building behind it is a retail building.
Just stores, shops, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Retail, okay. So it looks, and their parking lot is behind it, which looks like it abuts this. I guess I'm trying to, because I know they have signs they want to put in the back of the building.
Yes.
And I was assuming it's because they want to have visibility from the adjacent parking lot.
The rear of the building would be fully visible from the adjacent parking lot.
The other question I had was in regards to the gas pumps themselves. When you look at them, they have, you know, the digital screen where you know how many gallons of gas, and there's another little screen above it. And I'm curious as to what that is. Is that an advertising screen, a video screen? What that is. I'm just kind of looking at that. I understand that the entire pump is all considered a sign, mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering if those screens are also additional ways to advertise. And I guess what I'm getting at is I know they want freestanding signs between the pumps, and if they already have advertising at each pump, that's kind of what I'm trying to get clear in my mind.
During the discussion with the applicant regarding the conditions of approval, the applicant did request the ability to have audio and video at the pumps, so my assumption is that there may be some sort of video advertising at the pumps, and that's what that is for. We can confirm that with the applicant.
Okay. And as far as the buffering, what degree of buffering is going to be between their back and the parking lot behind them? I guess what I'm getting at, if it's going to be a tree screen that eventually is going to get 15 feet high, then those signs are going to end up being obscured.
We can provide the more detailed information.
Between
commercial uses of the same district, it's typically minimal. You know, your basic, some understory trees, canopy trees, it's not as opaque as you would see between differing districts.
Right.
But we can provide the specific screening for you at the hearing.
And I'm also, if you can do the measurement, so I know that you take, for the gas pump, you take the size of the entire pump and say that's a sign. Mm-hmm. And it looks like roughly half of it really isn't a sign. I'm mm-hmm. curious as to, if you deleted the area of the gas pump that isn't a sign, how much does that actually knock out? You know, where does that put us as far as their request overall versus what they're allowed?
So deleting the area of the gas pumps associated with the advertising you just looked at?
Because I want to know what the actual pump,
okay,
what amount of that is actually a sign.
Okay. So what area of the gas pump is actually assigned to signage?
Right.
My understanding what you're saying in calculating the signage, In this case, the entire envelope of the pump was used, and some of the area within the envelope was not actual signage area. So the, in effect, the applicant is reporting more square footage than is actually reflected in the signage.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. The actual signage is less than what they're showing because they count the entire footprint for the, you know, the size of the pump.
And you'd like to know the degree of that?
Yeah, difference. What it actually is. If it says that I got for arguments, let's say each one is 10 square feet and I've got 10, they're saying that's 100 square feet of signage. Well, if it's the signage on that pump is only 5 square feet, you really only have 50 feet of signs.
Okay.
That's I'm just trying to get the difference between those two, how much it makes up.
We can do that.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Kearse. Other questions? Commissioner Campbell.
As I'm looking at this, there it appears that there's an entrance on what we would consider the backside, but it's the northeast side. Is there an entrance back there?
That's correct, from the parking lot, the okay. adjacent parking lot.
And as I was looking at both of what I thought were entrances and the elevations, that's where signs 7 and 5 are. And so is staff objecting to there being signs over the entrances? Am I reading this right?
We are questioning the necessity of having the signs on the rear as well as the front, and we'd just like the applicant to provide a more robust justification for that.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Snyder.
Thank you. Second application is a zoning conversion. Loudon Tech Center. This is off Ridge Top Circle, again in Loudon Tech Center, south of Route 7. That is within the Route 28 taxing district. 4.12 acre parcel, previously developed as an office use, currently vacant, and there's a potential tenant, church, that would like to locate within the facility. So we are supportive of the request and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Other questions of staff on this application? Okay. Next.
Okay, the Inova Loudon Medical Center. This is a property you recently looked at for several zoning concept plan amendments and other tweaks to the previous special exception associated with the hospital use. This is the subsequent sign plan, 80-acre parcel north of Route 7. They've asked for a series of modifications of the building signs, canopy signs, entrance signs, and site identification signs along Route 7. What we have, similar to the previous Sunoco application, we flagged for your review, the extent of the number and size of signs that are being requested and a more robust justification as to why they are necessary. Overall, we recognize the unique site that this is, which being a regional medical facility, and we have looked at other, or the applicant's looking at the other regional facilities, the one on Route 50, the other medical campus in Leesburg, to see how they better align or how they are contrast or are similar. So, but we'd happy to answer any questions on this particular case.
I'm sorry, are you saying that the applicant is gonna come in with a comparison of signs here versus recommended signs here versus signs at the Leesburg campus and the HCA facility?
I had a pretty good conversation with the applicant earlier today, and they're gonna be providing me some additional information on Monday. So hopefully I'll have that analyzed and for you well in advance of the meeting.
Good, because I was going to ask that. other than my question, does anybody else have any questions on this? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
4 minutes in.
Hey.
Don't jinx it. Sorry. Knock on wood.
What are you talking about?
Asthma. Loudon County School Board. This is a Western Transportation Facility. This is east of Percival, south of Route 7. This is an existing facility, several applications, zoning map amendment, commission permit, special exception, and minor special exception. Right now, the site is split zoned. Generally, this area here is currently JLMA 3, and the rest of the balance of the site is rural commercial RC district. So the first would be to rezone this 1.83 acre JLMA 3 parcel to RC, a commission permit to allow this public facility, also a special exception to allow any one use on the site to exceed 10,000 square feet, and a minor special exception to amend the buffer yard requirements specifically around the perimeter in this general location. This would replace a required fence as part of a type 4 buffer with additional plantings, and also relocate some of the plantings on the within the buffer yard due to the sloping topography at the rear of the property. Some other information, it's about an 8-acre parcel. It currently has a bus maintenance facility. As you can see, bus storage, and in the front of the facility is a recycling center. Staff is generally supportive of the four applications, and we can answer any immediate questions that you have.
Thank you. Mr. Kearse.
If I understand correctly, you said the requirement is to put a fence around it. They're asking to remove the fence and just do additional plantings?
Correct. So a type 4 buffer is our most robust buffer.
Right.
And it allows for a berm, 4-foot berm, or a opaque fence. And rather, and based on the conversations the applicant had with the neighbors, the preference was not to create that.
So that was going to be my question. What do the neighbors prefer? That would be really my only concern, because there is a residential right around it. And if that's what they prefer, then
that was part of that negotiation, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Commissioner Scheel. You're on. You were on. Now you're on.
I received a letter from Bill Thomas, who is a realtor, and he was the spokesman for the 17 families that live in the division to the south and west of this facility. And so I'm passing it out to you, and perhaps we should take 5 minutes to read it. These are his concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Scheel. This is a briefing item, so if you read the letter and you have questions that staff can be prepared to answer at the public hearing, that would be great. Otherwise, I think reading the letter prior to the public hearing would be appropriate. Does anybody have any specific questions about this application? Yes, Commissioner Barnes.
How close is the building they're going to build? Is going to be how close is going to be to the homes that I'm looking at? It looks like the boundary line looks pretty close to it, and almost in the backyard.
We can get that information for you. In terms of the right now, there is one known building that the applicant wants to construct. The other buildings on the site are proposed to remain currently, and when funding is available, the applicant will eventually do an overall site redesign and redevelopment. But right now, there's just one new building proposed.
Is that temporary?
Essentially, I don't know if the building they're going to construct would remain once they do the site redesign.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the property there.
Sure.
It's getting pretty close to the houses up there. I see the line, the blue line. That's the boundary line, right? The blue line?
That's correct. That's correct. The property line.
Yeah, that's right in their backyard. Anyway.
Correct. So they're actually doubling the required buffer, which I believe is 30 feet or 60?
In the rear setback is 30 feet, and they're doubling the rear setback to 60 feet.
60 feet from the rear property line and substantially increase the required plantings, but we'll have a specific diagram of that at the hearing.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes. Other questions? Commissioner Scheel.
The main concern of mine, not necessarily that of the people who live in the development, is that we have a fairly steep slope in back of that large storage building, which has a blank rear face. I'd say the face is about 10 feet high, and yeah, you got it right there. And to the south of that is a rather steep slope. So if you're keeping with the 60-foot barrier, you could ostensibly have a building that is perhaps 20 feet high because of that slope, with a face without windows that would be within 90 or 100 feet of the homes. I know this is one of these occasions where we are either approving or disapproving of a site without a site plan. And we're sort of leaving it up to the next owner that the site plan that they developed is going to be a very good one, but we're still a little bit up in air, and I can understand why the next owner, which is the County of Loudoun, is buying this without any specifications of a site plan, because we're dealing with a property that's less than 2 acres in size, and there's not that much room. That's all I want to say.
Thank you, Commissioner Shield. Other questions for the applicant or for the staff?
Sorry. I do.
Yes, Commissioner.
I noticed in the staff write-up that there are determinations going back to at least 2007. At least there's reference of letters. Between 2007 and today, I would like to know what the relative size or increase in uses look like. So rephrase that. How has this evolved over time? I can read, and I appreciate Commissioner Shields' concern about what the future may hold in the applicant's request. I'm kind of interested in, has this grown and developed over that period since 07 or whenever it began, and what have the neighbors been exposed to so far?
Yeah, this is a well-established use. It was previously a privately owned garage. A service center for the bus facility was erected. We can certainly provide that application or that information.
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings. Other questions? Okay. Our next item is special exception 2015-28 Goose Creek Gardens and Pavilion, and that has been deferred. So we will not be hearing that at the public hearing.
Correct.
Mr. Snyder, yes. We can go on to the next one.
Next is the National Conference Center. This is a description of or a briefing of two applications. As one, it's National Conference Center East and West. It involves two zoning map amendments and a special exception. First, I'll go through the western application. The boundary in red is the existing National Conference Center. The western application is generally in this location off of, not over Belmont Place, but the name just escapes me. Hippart. Yes, sir. Thank you. That application is to rezone 8 acres from PDSA, which is the current designation of NCC. That's a special activity zoning district. They wish to rezone those 8 acres to an R8 district to develop 32 age-restricted single-family attached units, 32 townhomes. And they're requesting five zoning modifications with that application. This site is, again, to be accessed off of Kiphart. This graphic does not show the current development of the school on the property, but there is an internal drive that more or less bifurcates the property, allows access from Upper Belmont Place. And there's been a question that has arisen about an easement that would be necessary to access this property. That is still under review. And also, it's really the extent of the modifications necessary to accommodate these units that we flagged for your attention. So at this point, we're not supportive of the commission's recommendation of approval. Again, specific to the extent of the modifications they're requesting in the outstanding issue regarding the access easement to the property from Kiphart Drive. So moving to the east in this general location, this is the site of the sportsplex that is not currently used. You'll see the pool and the tennis courts in the back. This is NCC East. This is rezoning 38 acres of the National Conference Center from the PDSA to PDOP. This would be at 18, this would basically put the NCC campus on a 10-acre parcel zone PDOP. In order to accommodate that change, they're asking for a floor area or FAR increase from 0.6 to 0.7 to accommodate that existing condition. The balance, 20 acres, again, down on this area would be rezoned again to R8. In this instance, it would be a proposal to develop up to 94 townhouse units. There's seven zoning modifications associated with these applications. Staff is generally supportive of the applications. We have some reservations. First is regarding the policies regarding unmet housing needs, some encroachments to the floodplain that you see depicted on this graphic. And there's also some administrative amendments reconciling references between the concept plan, the proffer statement, and the applicant's statement of justification. So overall, this is in the suburban policy area. Densities are about four dwelling units per acre. So the proposed density is anticipated. It is more of, again, looking at access and the number of modifications to achieve that density on the west, and looking at some additional information about encroachments into the floodplain on the eastern application. So be happy to answer. It's a brief overview. Be happy to answer questions.
Thanks, Mr. Snyder. Questions for the applicant, for the staff? Yes, Mr. Kearse.
So I'm kind of curious. They're proposing age-restricted next to a couple of schools, which seems very counterintuitive to me that you put age-restricted. Generally, when people move to age-restricted, they're tired, not tired, but they're done with the family life and kids running around. I can't think of any age-restricted communities located next to schools, so I'm wondering if you could take a quick look around the county and see if we have any that are or are proposed to be located that close to a school.
Yes, sir.
Also, in regards to the second section, so my understanding, we're looking at this, the only access is coming up, was it Belmont Ridge Place, or you could go around to Kiphart. For both of these residential communities, those are the two ways in and out. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Upper Belmont Place, in this general location, and then also Kiphart Drive.
And as far as the traffic impacts on those, is that no concerns with traffic?
No, there's some clarification, but overall the infrastructure was deemed capable of handling the additional trips generated by these 100 or so units.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? I just wanted to see if we could get a better either graphic, overhead photograph, diagram of the current conditions. If you need to pull the high school application, that's fine. But if you could just jump up real high and take a picture, that'd probably be better. So
yeah, the 216 maps are out.
We can get that
for you.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Kearse.
Just out of curiosity, so the as far as will these be attached to another homeowners association? Will it be its own homeowners association, or what's the status of that for these units?
To Jackie on that one.
They have not indicated if they're going to be entering into an existing homeowners association.
Okay,
can
so
we
then.
Ask? Can we ask the applicant?
Yeah,
fine.
Yes.
Okay. And thank you. I was curious.
All right. Other questions? Okay. Thanks. It's kind of false advertising, by the way. That was two applications in one number. Just saying.
Oh, on the agenda?
Yes. That's okay.
Okay. Trying to be efficient. Good intentions. Commonwealth Center Mini Storage. This is a site you may immediately recognize this location due to the Top Golf facility here, south of Route 7, east of Loudoun County Parkway. This is another request for a mini warehouse storage facility in the PDIP zoning district. Three applications. First is a special exception to establish the self-storage use. The second application would be a minor special exception to increase the floor area ratio for that facility. And then the last application would be for a signed development plan associated with that facility. At this point, we're not supportive of commission recommendation of approval, as we continue to have concerns over the overall design of the facility, specifically the materials, scale, and massing of this six-story, 140,000-square-foot building. You know, we look at the compatibility of adjacent uses, University Center to the north, and generally the overall high quality that is we've come to see along this area of the corridor. And specific to the signage associated with the use, the applicant's not finalized those details, so we'd be able to look at those details before giving you a final recommendation. So we'll provide you a status at the time of the public hearing. So I'd be happy to answer questions.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to be clear. You said that they will be coming in with better signage descriptions.
No, we're not expecting them to resubmit anything prior to the hearing.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Any questions? Mr. Campbell.
The looking at the elevations, the red square, is that whole thing a sign, or the where there's the, I guess, some kind of logo in it on what is that, the east end of the building?
It's like it's on all four sides.
Yeah, it's like this giant white square with the red trim. Is that whole thing a sign, or what is it?
I don't believe that is supposed to be a sign. What the applicant has not given us are illustratives of what the sign will look like. The attachment 7 that you see as the elevations,
yep.
I don't believe this is representing what the signs will look like. I think it was the architect endeavoring to place the sign on the illustrations.
Okay, so there's a sign that goes in the square. The square itself, that giant square, is not the sign.
Correct. That is going to be backlit metal.
So the metal, the giant metal frame will be backlit.
Yes.
And then there will be something in there that is smaller that will be considered the sign.
Yes.
But the whole thing's not considered sign, even though it's backlit?
We would consider the square within the square the sign.
But help me understand. We consider a whole gas pump that's not got labels everywhere a sign, but we consider just where the text is on this the sign.
Yes.
Am I understanding that right?
And well, when you
I quit. I don't know what is a sign.
In all fairness,
I don't know what a sign
type. Is. Building sign types different than the gas pump types. When we went to revamp the sign ordinance overall, there was a push to have more specificity. So when you look at the complexity of the sign ordinance, that's where they create some distinctions on those different types of sign uses. But I think this is one of the issues that we have with the application. Is questions similar to yours, getting a handle on what it is exactly they're requesting and proposing.
Okay. Well, I guess, yeah, we'll figure it out.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Other questions? Commissioner Jennings.
Two points. One is on the sign, and that has to do with following up on an approval for Broadlands 104 from our last public hearing, where I'm not sure that the signage was appropriately reflected in what we actually approved. So I'm actually, that's why I'm going back. So I'm very concerned about what the real signage will be, mm-hmm. if that is it exclusively. The second is, occurs to me, we spent a good amount of time approving a mini warehouse use immediately to the west of this one, and spent a great deal of time on that application with trying to raise the quality of materials, and we're convinced mm-hmm. that, in fact, it was at a standard that was commensurate with the rest of One Loudoun. And I feel some obligation for a certain equity between the facilities, so I would be interested to know what this is going to look like and how it compares to that facility that we just got done approving.
So if you're just looking at, make sure we have elevations.
Compare and contrast the materials. I know that's a concern in the massing and the actual part, but I'd really like to know exactly what that's going to be to the extent we can, so that we can compare it to what we approved previously.
And then the signage is more specificity in the sign they're actually signs are proposing.
Yeah, very much. I think that's been raised, but
cool.
I was just sharing my heightened concern because of what I'm perceiving is perhaps some signage changes that I wasn't aware of.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. Other questions? I just wanted to reiterate, and I think, Mr. Kears, please. No, I always go last. Go ahead.
I won't beat the, just to reiterate, like, the more specifics on the signage. Also, the visibility of this location along the Route 7 corridor, I think this building should be at a higher standard rather than a medium or a lower standard as far as design and look. So staff, I understand you've have some ideas of what you would like to see. If you could provide some of those examples to the Planning Commission as well as the applicant, if you haven't, I'm sure you might have already. And you know, for the applicant's point, we would like to have a lot more specifics on the signage, again, considering the location right on Route 7 along this corridor. So those are my concerns.
Thank you, Commissioner Kearson. I'm just going to add again, just to make sure the applicant's clear. I'd love a better idea of what this looks like, what the signs are, where maybe a photograph with this a digital image of what the signs are going to look like, because I don't have a good understanding of, based on what I see here, I don't get it. I don't see what it looks like. I don't understand it, and I'd like a better understanding of it. Okay. Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. The next item on your agenda is a zoning ordinance amendment proposing changes to the Planned Development Town Center, or PDTC, zoning district. This particular amendment was initiated by the Zoning Ordinance Action Group. They began work on this amendment back in 2015. At the same time, they were looking at the Planned Development Mixed-Use Business Zoning District. And at that time, those districts were separated out. The PD MUB moved forward last year, and then this amendment was picked back up again in 2016. The ZOAG did prepare a fairly detailed draft of the changes that they wished to see, with the main purpose of adding some flexibility to the district to reflect or to address a lot of the issues that they saw as they, through previous PDTC zoning district applications, and trying to reduce the number of modifications they typically seek when they request those rezonings. So after the ZOAG did prepare the draft, staff did an evaluation of that, and we had numerous comments and issues with the draft. So we did set up meetings with the ZOAG subcommittee, where there were probably around at least approximately 12 meetings that were held to work through the draft and discuss the various issues that staff had, with the goal of reaching a consensus district. And for the most part, we were successful in accomplishing that. There were basically four areas of issues that we could not reach agreement on, and those are identified in your staff report. And for that reason, we are recommending that the amendment go to a Planning Commission work session where we will have representative from the Zoning Ordinance Action Group attend to work through that. And they are also planning to have a representative attend the public hearing to answer any questions to at that particular time. The summary of the amendment is spelled out fairly well in your staff report and the issues as well, but I'd be happy to go into more detail on that or answer any questions you may have on it.
Thanks, Mark. Questions for the applicant or for for staff? Commissioner Campbell.
On this this issue of how far the minimum separation from Town Center Core should be, where ZOAG is suggesting 3,000 feet and we're suggesting a mile, are there other examples in other jurisdictions or anything that have that separation between their town center cores or similar types of zoning arrangements where they say we make sure they're a mile or 2 miles or 2,000 feet or whatever? Is there, maybe if we could just get some context if there
okay.
are other examples
All right.
to know where we're coming from on that. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Other questions? Mark, I just wanted to, I'm a little unclear why we have a PDTC and a PD MUB because they seem super close to each other. Can we do a maybe some sort of comparison between the MUB and the TC?
Sure. Are you asking for the
here's why they're different and here's why we need both
okay.
type of thing?
Will do.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stoltz.
Sure. I also have the next one.
And you get the next one, too.
Yes.
How about that?
The next one is a zoning ordinance amendment and a zoning map amendment regarding the floodplain overlay district. The bulk of this is really dealing with the floodplain overlay district, the mapping of the floodplain overlay district. And this is a mandated amendment from FEMA. FEMA did fairly recently, I think in August, adopted their flood insurance rate map and required the county within a 6-month time period to adopt that map and the regulations that go along with it in order to remain under the National Flood Insurance Program. So I know that FEMA did go through the process, did do notification. There was appeal process where people could appeal FEMA's designation of the floodplain. And so through that fairly lengthy period of time, they did adopt their map. And like I said, I think that was in August, and gave the county 6 months to adopt it. So what the county has done is to reflect the flood insurance rate map, and we'll map that to our floodplain overlay district. And of course, as part of the amendment, per the state code and the zoning ordinance, we were required to notify every property that has the floodplain on it, of the floodplain overlay district on it, to notify them of this particular amendment. Even though, again, it is changes to the map to reflect what was adopted by FEMA. The zoning ordinance amendment part of this really is simply updating the zoning ordinance to add the date of the map of February. And there is, we do have till February to adopt the map, so we are on a fairly quick timeline. We're shooting to get this to the Board of Supervisors public hearing in January. I know that the bulk of the zoning ordinance changes were adopted at the end of 2015, where it was a fairly extensive amendment to the zoning ordinance to reflect the FEMA comments to make sure that it was in compliance with their requirements. So the bulk of that, again, was already completed. So this is just, in terms of the amendment to the zoning, just the update of the date. So I believe we have some folks from Building and Development that are really handling the mapping side of this to also answer any questions I may not be able to at this point, or we can at the public hearing.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions of the staff at this point? The only thing I wanted just to get some confirmation on was I understand the advertisement for this did not put in the paper all some 85,000 PIN numbers. And so if we could just have legal confirm that that's not going to cause us any trouble.
And Jeff, I can speak to that right now because because our office did look at that and was, you know, deeply involved with that decision. So we did make the decision that the list of tax map numbers might be longer than the paper itself. But right, we added the extra mapping and some descriptions for that. So we were involved initially with the drafting of the ad.
Okay. And if we don't FEMA arrest the county, is that Merrithew that gets arrested if we don't?
Just one of the owners will receive a letter.
They will also receive a letter. Yeah. Okay. All right. No further questions. Thank you. Oh, Mr. Scheel. There you go.
I've done quite a lot of work on behalf of a couple in the Lovettsville area who did not receive any letter, and suddenly they find their property formally designated as a minor floodplain, and now it is designated as a major floodplain. Furthermore, the only information that they had were the maps in the Loudoun Times Mirror, which were glaringly deficient in that you couldn't read them. I would defy anybody to find their property on that map. Also, since this ordinance concerns all the incorporated towns in Loudoun County, it's right on page 2. It says the unincorporated areas of the county and 6 of the 7 incorporated towns are participating communities in the NFIP, whatever the NFIP is. Hillsborough is not a participating community. And so why haven't, on these maps, why aren't the streams located in the built up, in the incorporated areas of these six towns.
Well,
it doesn't make much sense. In fact, I went to mapping and I said, is there any map in the county, mind you, that has the correct current floodplain ratings in the incorporated areas of the towns? And mapping said no. So all one can prognosticate is that if this happens to be the incorporated area and a major floodplain is here and a minor floodplain is coming out, that somewhere in that area there's a change. Or if there are five streams coming into this town and they're major floodplains and you have three streams coming out and two are major and one are minor, you haven't the slightest idea what stream is which. In other words, what I'm saying, it's incomprehensible unless you know this county inside out to decipher this. And I asked Nancy to give you a copy of these maps that were in the Loudoun Times Mirror and ask you to decipher them. So I think there's very, very poor notification to the public, especially when we are going to seemingly increase the requirements. In other words, these are more stringent requirements rather than lesser requirements, as it seemed to me, because there seemed to be so many major floodplains that hitherto were considered minor floodplains under the current. So I'd like a comment on that.
Yeah. I will comment now. We can also ask the Department of Building and Development to add to this if needed, but I will just point out.
Well, are they here? Can we add?
Yeah, and I will just say, in terms of the incorporated towns, they are not subject to our county zoning ordinance, so they are not impacted by the mapping that the county does for the floodplain overlay district. It's my understanding the towns are going through their own process to address the FEMA changes to the maps within the towns, but they're not subject to the county's zoning ordinance or floodplain overlay district in the zoning ordinance, so that is why they're not included as part of this process.
I'm just reading what it says here, that technically they are bound.
They will be subject to it, but they'll have to amend their own ordinances and maps to accommodate for that.
Well, evidently the town of Lovettsville hasn't done so yet.
Yeah, and I don't know.
And what are they waiting for?
And the other comment with regard to stricter, I do think I can comfortably say that in some cases, you know, the map is changing to be more restrictive. In other cases, it becomes less restrictive. So we can give you some more details, specifics on that, but Glenn, did you want to add anything? This is Glenn Rubis with the Department of Building and Development.
Okay. Basically, the floodplains that were remapped, the county's map was updated. There were areas of floodplain that were added to land that was previously not floodplain, and there were sections of floodplain that were removed and are no longer floodplain. It was some here, some there. We will have, by the 22nd, we should have a map that shows where those changes took place, where it was added on, where it was subtracted, and also information on where the, what we call the major floodplain, FEMA calls our special flood hazard area, where that was and then where it is now. There were some adjustments to that. In general, they were relatively minor. I'm not sure of the particular instance of the homeowner or whomever that did not receive their notification. We did our best. We sent out, I think, about 7,500 postcards to everybody that was either in floodplain, their property, or we added a buffer on that of, I believe it was 75 feet. This was a few years ago, so pardon my not remembering exactly, but we did put a buffer on that to try and incorporate even those that were just close to it. So we did a good job, I think, of trying to contact everybody, but certainly I can't guarantee that everybody was, and apparently there was somebody that did not seem to get their notification, which is...
Well, Mr. Scheel, could you clarify, is the couple that you're dealing with in the town of Lovettsville? It sounded like that's the case, so...
They are living in the town of Lovettsville, but I believe they have properties that are both in and outside of the town of Lovettsville that border on the same stream, which is a branch of the Dutchman or Dutchman's Creek.
Okay.
No, if you could press the button,
there we go.
It's all recorded.
Okay. There are letters going out at this time. They will be mailed either today or tomorrow to everybody who has a property that intersects the newly mapped floodplain, both major and minor. It's a notification about the public hearings that will be coming up on the 22nd. So there will be another round of mailings. I think this one totaled 9,000 some total. In part because it included the minor floodplain in addition to major floodplain.
Mr. Scheel, if you don't mind providing the addresses for your contact, I'm sure that the county staff will confirm that they'll get a letter.
Okay. I'll do that right now.
How about we wait till after?
or I'll do it afterwards. Okay, I'll do it afterwards. One other question. Is this one of those cases that, regardless of what we think that the federal government is going to say, this is it, you know, like it or leave it? Mm-hmm. I mean, be honest, because why are we wasting our time? Huh?
Mark. I think Mark should take that.
More or less, and I don't mean to be flippant with that answer.
No, that's correct.
What's being adopted, that will remain as it is up until February 17th. There are processes that FEMA has for people that do not believe that the floodplain is mapped correctly, and they can submit information that tries to counter that mapping information, and FEMA has a process of going through and evaluating it and making a decision. So there's processes to get out of floodplain if you don't believe it's correct. But in general, at this point in time, the map that we are talking about is set.
And you mentioned that process, and I quote, it's based on studies using statistics and computer modeling, just like the ones that, I guess, predicted the election.
Well, the only difference is we're dealing with people in one case and we're dealing with science in the other.
Okay. And how much would you think that such a study using statistics and computer modeling to controvert FEMA's statistics would cost, say, for 10 acres? I mean, are we talking about $1,000 or $20,000?
I don't have the answer to that. We can provide that kind of information to you. It's going to vary depending on the site, certainly.
Uh-huh.
And it is more involved than just statistics and computers. There's a lot of engineering that goes into it. FEMA has manuals upon manuals upon manuals of all the guidance and everything that has to be conducted to do this properly. So
mm-hmm.
It's a lot of thoughts going into it. Whether it's right is, I guess, up to everybody to decide themselves.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scheel. I think the key here is that they're not using pollsters for FEMA. So did you have a comment?
I just wanted to reiterate that, you know, the maps that were produced, I mean, they are small, but they do have the parcel boundaries on them. Each individual property owner that's impacted by the floodplain will receive a mailed notice before the public hearing, and included in that ad was also a link to the county's website. There's a whole page and section devoted to the floodplain and a phone number for those to call and get more information. Those resources were also outlined in the ad.
Thank you, Ms. Sigler. Other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Our Planning Commission briefing is now over, and we'll move to our Planning Commission work session items. Our first work session item is ZMAP 2015-0003, Special Exception 2015-0010, ZMOD 2015-0008, Poets Walk at Lansdowne. Welcome, Ms. Marsh.
Thank you. Since the Planning Commission hearing, staff and the applicant have worked together to resolve the transportation issues. Staff is no longer requesting that the applicant provide a sidewalk along Lansdowne Boulevard, and the applicant has updated their proffers to include the $25,000 contribution for the bus shelter. Staff supports the Planning Commission's recommendation of approval at this time, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Marsh. Are there any questions for staff or the applicant? None at all. Then this is in the
Ashburn
District. Please continue.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for reminding me.
As I said the last time, I think this is a preferred outcome in that we get a bus shelter that is usable and complete as opposed to partial offerings, neither of which we're sure will actually get completed. So I think it's really in the best interest of all. That said, I move that the Planning Commission forward ZMAP 2015-003, Special Exception 2015-0010, and ZMOD 2015-0008, Poets Walk at Lansdowne Memory Care, to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval, subject to the proffer statement dated October 31st, 2016, and the Special Exception Conditions of Approval dated October 31st, 2016, and based on the findings for approval in the October 31, 2016 Planning Commission Work Session Memo.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Blackburn. Any comments? I'll add a comment. So I was a little worried because I think we kind of need both a bus shelter and a sidewalk. I'm not sure the best way to do that, and it looks like this is the best way to do that as far as we can tell. So I'll be supporting the motion. Any other comments?
Can I interrupt for, we need to change the dates on there. I apologize for the oversight. October 31st for both the conditions of approval and the proffer statement should be November 1st, 2016.
Is that a friendly amendment?
Accepted? I accept that as a, okay.
Very good.
Okay.
Any further comments?
November 1st.
November 1st.
Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 8-0-1 with Commissioner Sisley absent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our final work session item is Zoning Amendment 2016-0013, Proposed Zoning Ordinance to amend the revised 1993 Loudoun County Zoning Ordinance to revise regulations in regards to permitting unenclosed porches to project further into certain yards. Welcome, Mr. Elkins.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This work session is in follow-up to the public hearing held on October 25th for ZOAM 2016-0013. At the public hearing, the fire marshal expressed fire safety concerns with allowing unenclosed porches to project as close as 5 feet to the property line in instances where the property is abutted wooded open space. A memo from the fire marshal was distributed earlier this week via email, which explains her position in more detail. Also, Deputy Fire Marshal Swain is here to help answer any questions that you may have. Following the public hearing, staff met with the fire marshal to discuss text amendment options that could alleviate fire safety concerns and still allow a 5-foot setback option. Ultimately, though, we were unable to determine a method that would ensure abutting open space remained open and would not become overgrown in perpetuity without creating enforcement challenges. With this in mind, staff has provided the commission with two options for consideration tonight, both of which allow an increased projection into the required rear yard for single-family detached and single-family attached dwellings and are consistent with the criteria for approval of the zoning ordinance. Attachment 1 in your packets addresses the fire marshal's concern and eliminates the 5-foot setback option for properties abutting open space. Attachment 2 in your packet is consistent with previous ZMODs that have been approved for Lansdowne and Ashburn Farms and further addresses ZOAG concerns by allowing projection of unenclosed porches to as close as 5 feet within the property for to as close as 5 feet when the property abuts land that is commonly owned open space or within a permanently open space easement. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission forward ZOAM 2016-0013 to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval as included in either Attachment 1 or Attachment 2 at the discretion of the Planning Commission. And that's all I have. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Elkins. I'm sorry, I only have one attachment, not two attachments in my packet. Is that, am I wrong? Okay. So it's not. Oh, I got it.
So a separate page. Just.
It's page 4 of 7. Okay. Okay. Are there any questions for staff or the Fire Marshal, Commissioner Campbell?
Yes, and it's Deputy Fire Marshal Swain. In the memo, we're concerned about overgrowth in these open space areas that I guess trees, branches, bushes, stuff, flammable stuff, particularly grows
yes,
up
sir.
In those. Do we have that same concern for people's backyards?
In some respects, yes, we do public education, but I think. Most people, for the most part, do keep their properties clear up to along their house. I actually went out in some of those areas today to see what it looks like today, where some of the modifications have already taken place. And there is a hazard, and there is a firefighting access issue as well. And I think both of them are equally important. I don't want to say one's more important than the other, but obviously our issue is life safety. We've had some fires recently that were started outside fires that we were lucky in some places. One just earlier this week that a neighbor saw it, grabbed a garden hose, and put it out. It was the middle of the day. No one was home. And it started to burn in a kayak, which is ABS plastic, which it would have taken at least one, maybe two townhouses out. So it is a real concern. And this was pine needles that had blown against a wooden fence, and the kayaks were leaned against the wooden fence. So that's our major concern, is we're going to run into the same thing as if people enclose those areas or just the debris piling up under the decks. People are notorious for storing things under the decks, and most of it is combustible. So
yeah, I'm
that
just
answered your question.
I'm just trying to understand the difference between the area that may be technically in the yard of an individual that is full of debris that we can't really manage versus open space that is full of debris that we don't manage. Is there, in I guess this is anecdotal, but would you say that it's much more likely that homeowners' yards are clear or that HOA open space is clear? I guess I'm just trying to find what the distinction is.
I think the distinction is we, for the most part, I believe there are some ordinances that require people to keep, at least if they're in a homeowning association, to keep their grass cut and weeds down and things of that nature. The open spaces don't really have that requirement, and that's the difference that we see.
Okay,
but in other words, if you're in an HOA, you're required to manicure, keep
right. But if you have bushes all the way up to your deck, can't you have that, bushes or trees all the way up?
Well, that we do mention that some of the issue, we do have an issue with that.
Right. Right, so that's what I'm trying to understand is what is the difference between somebody with you know, where we say, hey, it's got to be 10 feet from the property line, but they have bushes and trees from their property line all the way up to their deck. How is that any different than saying it's 5 feet from the property line and the open space easement is full of bushes and trees?
To go on the record, we don't agree with that either because
right.
We've seen issues. I can give you some examples of a church fire we had up in Purcellville last year, and it was just, it was a very small flame that it caught a green evergreen tree, and it went up fairly quickly. So I don't make the distinction. I don't agree with either one.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Other questions? Seeing none, this is a countywide application. Does anybody want to make a motion for that? Mr. Kearse? Sure, we'll give you another minute. It is after 7:05. Just thought I would throw that out. We do we're required to quit at 11:30. So.
Oh, so you're telling me I got lots of time.
I'm going to send it to the paper.
Come on. Do something.
Do you need some help training? I can get Nancy over here.
Okay. Why am I getting a blank?
Because it takes a while.
No, I've been going back and forth. But I don't have a little swirly thing telling me it's thinking. Oh, no, I've still got to fix it.
Yes, sir. Mr. Campbell?
Just one follow-up question. You said that you do public awareness campaigns to help people make sure that their backyards are clear of these kind of flammable materials up against a porch and things. If we did allow the 5 feet, would you do that same kind of communication to HOA boards and things to say, hey, would you keep your open spaces clear?
I don't know how that's possible if it's wooded. It's mature tree growth is some of the issues that we're talking about. Okay. And I don't know that there's probably an ordinance somewhere that says they want the trees there. So, right.
Yeah, it's
I don't know that we could
right.
do that.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So, Deputy Swain, just to reiterate that, half of my yard is wooded. So if I built my deck out through that, then you'd still have the same problem, right? I mean, that's the situation. Where then the HOA is not going to make me clear out my wooded area.
No, but I would assume most people, like I said before, manicure and keep their yard in some type of...
Except for a wooded area.
Well, I would assume that we'd get the leaves back away from under your deck and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And that's the some of the issue that we're talking about is most people, I have a wooded lot myself, and I know that my wife gets on me from now until about Christmas about keeping the leaves out from under the deck and everywhere else. So I see your point, but when it goes up to an area that really there would be no control over who would be responsible for keeping it clear. I hope that answered your question.
I think it does. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Lloyd.
What's the current open burn policy in Loudoun County? And is it like you've rezoned commercial residential? Can you open burn certain times of the month? What's the open
right
burn?
Now?
That
there
seems
is
to be a source of fire.
Outside burning is allowed in certain areas, except for areas where it's overdeveloped. It would be easier. It's a more complicated answer than you, okay. you can imagine. I would, if you would like a sidebar afterwards, I can get you all that information. But there are certain seasons of the year that burning is allowed in certain places and other places that it's not. And it's governed by forestry laws, county laws, and the air quality laws. So it's not an easy one-step answer.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Ms. Kearse.
I move that the Planning Commission forward the alternative language for ZOAM 2016-13, covered decks and unenclosed porches, as provided in Attachment 2 to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval.
There's a motion. Is there a second? Going once. somebody better have an alternate motion.
I'll second it. Just
seconded by Commissioner Campbell. We now have we're now in comment. It sounds like we might need some comments. So, anybody, Mr. Campbell, comments?
Yeah, I can go both ways on this, honestly. But I tell you what, if you guys put a gun to my head and made me decide, you know, Trump or Hillary on this one, I would. That's probably too soon.
Too soon.
I would probably err on attachment one, even though I seconded this. I would probably err that way. Just I'd rather err on safety than otherwise, because I really don't have a strong feeling either way. That's just my honest opinion. That if I had to absolutely pick, I would probably tend the other way. But I don't have a really strong feeling about it. So if the commission feels the other way, that's okay too.
Okay. Chairman? So it looks like, Commissioner Kearse.
So my reason for picking attachment two is I'd like to give a little more flexibility to the homeowner to go within five if it met that certain condition, because as the chairman just pointed out, you could very easily create the situation we're trying to avoid, if, no matter how many feet you put. If, as you mentioned, if you have a wooded yard and you build right up to those trees, you've got the same situation whether it's 5, 10, or 50 feet from the property line.
Doesn't matter.
So that's why, given the choice between the two, I'd rather give a little more flexibility to the homeowner to go within the five if that condition's met.
Thank you, Mr. Kearse. Does anybody else want to comment on this? I guess I'm at about the same level, and I'm willing to support alternate language two, which is the current motion. Any other comments? Okay, then all in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions. Motion passes 8-0-1 with Commissioner Sicily absent. So thank you. Our work session is now closed. Oh, do we have any comments, Mr. Matthew?
As I mentioned earlier before the meeting started, we would like to conduct our Christmas dinner on December 20th. That would be the public hearing evening. December the 8th, which would be the briefing, is unavailable to us at Tuskegee, so the 20th is available. And we'd like to get a head count as to who might be able to attend.
Will there be anybody that cannot attend the December 20th public hearing and dinner subsequently thereafter? It's paid for, just to let you know.
The food is paid for.
You in?
I want to ask. Yeah, I'm in.
Oh.
Not anything else.
Okay. It looks like everybody but Mr. Sicily is confirmed. We'll ask Mr. Sicily later. Ms. Blackburn.
I just thought I'd throw this out since Charlie was with us most of the year. Charlie,
yes,
we're inviting
him as well.
I'd
be happy to invite him.
Very good.
I've already asked to have him invited.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'd also like to ask if we could put on the agenda for December 8th, tentatively, a briefing on the Silver Line, now that the Silver Line, the planning or the Transportation Land Use Committee completed its work this evening, or this afternoon. It will go to the board in December for final, not final verification, but I think the TLUC recommendations are going to the board. But we'd like to have
TLUC will send it to the board. The board will send it to us. And you want us to give give us a briefing on December 8th prior to it coming to us? Officially.
Prior to it coming to you officially, or right at that same time, we will still brief you for the public hearing in January. We'd like to start now and see what some of the issues are that we need to focus on, and there may be even a discussion of additional dates for meeting and working on it.
It sounds like that's probably one we're going to need to have at least one or two work sessions, and maybe we think about sending that to a working group.
Yeah, I think we can talk about that in our upcoming meeting.
Okay.
And that is all I have, sir.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else? We are adjourned. Thank you. Anybody else?